Hi there, I'm Sophie Douay, and this is SwissInfo's programme for November 4th. This week, I'm looking at expectations for the upcoming ski season and prospects for Swiss tourism.
Skitmaniego wette winter. Wieso dass ich das weiß? Kann mit Eisschule wacken?
That was Switzerland's very own weather prophet, Martin Horrit, predicting a bumper snow season in the Tourism Board's latest promotional advertisement. The bizarre ad features Horrit sitting on a large and very busy anthill, claiming that the ants crawling all over him, and at times even into his mouth, have come from neighbouring countries in anticipation of a bloody great winter. The ad is also perhaps a sign of how desperate tourism authorities are getting following dismal snowfalls last year and evidence that the strong franc will drive more of Europe's ski tourists to neighbouring Austria and France, where a holiday in the Alps is considerably cheaper. The Economics Ministry has reported that overnight stays in hotels during the summer declined 2.5% and has predicted a winter season decline of nearly 3% over last year's figures, which it puts down to the strong franc. Meanwhile, tabloids in Britain are advising skiers to avoid Switzerland, seizing on a recent survey that found that the exchange rate, combined with higher resort charges, has led to a significant rise in the cost of a Swiss ski holiday for British tourists. SwissInfo's economics correspondent Matt Allen met with members of Switzerland's Tourist Board last week to get a take on the situation. And I caught up with them afterwards for a chat about some of the issues facing the industry. Matt, did you get the impression that this is a permanent decline in the number of tourists visiting or that the industry might bounce back?
Well, it very much hinges on the state of the Swiss franc. As long as the Swiss franc is strong against the euro, the dollar and other currencies, then the tourism is going to continue to suffer. But they do look on the positive side for 2013 onwards, saying that from 2013, bookings are going to increase by 2.1% and then 3.4% in 2014. I think they're rather assuming that the various economic crises and debt crises are going to be resolved and the franc is going to reduce in value, but there's hope for the tourism anyway.
Do you think that perhaps the Swiss tourism industry might be resting on their laurels a bit?
Well, they would argue no. They say they're offering a much broader range of services and products than they ever used to, with wellness spas being on the increase, with family-friendly hotels on the increase. In the winter, they say they've got a lot more hiking trails for non-skiers. They've got igloo resorts for the more adventurous. So they would say no. But I have heard before anecdotal evidence that besides the high-class, high-end Swiss hotellery industry, where obviously the standards are world-class, when you come to the mid-range bracket, I have heard before that the Swiss hotelleries perhaps could do a little bit more in terms of service and their facilities. But as I say, this is just anecdotal, and it might be having an effect. I don't know.
What are the pressures facing the winter industry or the winter ski industry compared with summer tourism?
It's basically because those emerging markets of China and India and the Gulf States and Brazil, there are fewer skiers there for obvious reasons. And so they don't tend to come to Switzerland in the winter. Now, if you consider that numbers of overnight stays are going down, but they are being propped up to some extent in the summer by visitors from emerging economies, from the BRIC countries, for example. There were 27% more visitors from the BRIC countries last summer. From China, the increase was about 50%, so it's massive growth. But they only want to come in the summer because they're not into winter sports. And so winter sport can't rely on this cushioning effect from new customers coming in, and it's the ski resorts that are going to suffer the most.
Well, following Matt's story published on swissinfo.ch this week, we asked our readers whether price was a key factor in deciding where to go skiing this winter. Many readers picked up on a comment in the story from Switzerland tourism director Jörg Schmid, who said British skiers would always come to Switzerland, as revealing of complacency towards tourists. A majority of readers said a big factor for deciding to go to France or Austria was that Swiss service standards were below par. Let's hear what some of them had to say.
Swiss holiday providers continue to live in their dreams that Switzerland is the best and tourists will automatically come back for the Swiss alpine slopes. with the poor quality of service and often arrogant mannerisms of the mountain people managing their failing ski resorts, other parts of the world have moved forward to woo the tourist dollar.
Price isn't the main issue. I've asked a dozen friends who preferred Austria why they did so. The vast majority mentioned service. If Swiss hoteliers believe they'll come back anyway no matter what, so we better just sit and wait it out, they'll find themselves with serious problems. Guys, wake up. Having the right geography isn't enough anymore. You need to be better than your neighbours. Sorry.
Wow. If you were to judge by that, you would think that the Swiss tourism sector is doomed to irrelevance. So it was a bit surprising then to see that Switzerland was one of two European countries, along with Denmark, that made it into the Lonely Planet Guide Best in Travel 2012 Top 10 Countries list, released last week. Tom Hall is the London-based editor of LonelyPlanet.com and one of the three experts who chose the final 10 countries for inclusion in the list. I spoke to him earlier by telephone about what it was about Switzerland that clinched the country the number 10 spot on a list that includes the more exotic and cheaper destinations of Uganda, Burma and Ukraine.
I think there's been a feeling for a few years that the traditional image of Switzerland, that Kuhglocken alpine vista image, is being replaced by something a little more modern and a little more outward looking, maybe. I think that obviously Switzerland still has great natural beauty. It's very attractive towns and things like that. But there's also a feeling that if you go somewhere like Zurich, that it's a very interesting place for a city break, that the outdoor scene has really kicked on and gone into an upper gear, and the enthusiasm for activities in Switzerland makes it a very attractive place to go. We talk about the festivals that take place in various Swiss towns that make it worth going to at certain times of year, and of course there is cow trekking.
What is cow trekking?
Cow trekking is the latest back-to-nature trend, the brainchild of an organic farmer at Boulderhof in Hemshofen, where trekkers can saddle a Tyrolese grey for a jaunt through the countryside along the banks of the Rhine, only in Switzerland.
Only in Switzerland, indeed. Well, the Lonely Planet is known or made its name around the world for being a budget guide, and Switzerland is not a budget destination. How do you reconcile those two conflicting positions, if you like?
Well, there are destinations all around the world that are perceived to be expensive places. I would also offer Japan and Iceland as two examples of those. And yet those destinations, I think, like Switzerland, remain places that are on lots of people's must-see lists. And I think that with Switzerland, it's simply to say we can offer you advice on how you can make it affordable. Yes, absolutely, you have to watch your money very carefully when you're in Switzerland. You do in most places in Europe, and therefore we would pride ourselves on giving people the information to get the most out of that.
Okay, and you did mention in the review of Switzerland that these new TGVs from Paris will increase accessibility to the Swiss Alps. Do you think that will help the Swiss ski season, fight back a little bit against the competition from places like Austria and France this winter?
Absolutely. I think it's a proven case that when there are fast trains making it easy to get to places, people are prepared and enthusiastic to travel by that method of transport. It's going to do good things, I think. All resorts need to take care to be competitive, but I think that lots of Swiss resorts do have iconic status, and as people are thinking harder about where to go and when, they do tend to go back to those iconic places because they stand out in their minds and they know they're going to get a certain standard there. So it's less of a risk in some ways.
That was LonelyPlanet.com editor Tom Hall speaking with me earlier. Well, given Hall's enthusiasm for Zurich, how about we take a look at what there is apart from shopping and clubbing to entertain the city's tourists? Zurich-based Swiss Info reporter Isabel Leibel-Johnson visited the Swiss National Museum, where the life and works of Swiss-born Abraham Louis Breguet form the basis of an exhibition titled A.L. Breguet, How Watchmaking Conquered the World. Let's cross to Isabel now.
The watch and the clock, key parts of modern life. But watchmaking wouldn't be what it is today without the innovations of its uncrowned king, Abraham Louis Breguet. Breguet was born in Neuchâtel, but founded a watchmaking workshop in Paris following his marriage in 1775 into a wealthy Parisian family. Here's Swiss National Museum curator Christina Keller.
You can say there is a before Breguet and an after Breguet. And he made a big revolution in the watchmaking.
That was with the tourbillon.
The tourbillon, also the souscriptions watches. Then he made a kind of new aesthetic, a very elegant aesthetic that also today is very nice to look on.
The tourbillon, for example, which was patented in 1801, was a highly complex mechanism which compensated for the influence of gravity, allowing watches to be, for the first time, completely accurate. The rich and the famous flocked to buy his watches, which were distinguished by flat, coin-edged cases, more legible figures, and slim, straight hands. Among his customers were Napoleon Bonaparte, Tsar Alexander I, and the British Royal House. On show in the exhibition is a clock which normally stands in the Duke of Edinburgh's bedroom. Perhaps the most famous piece, however, is the Marie Antoinette watch, which contained all of the latest innovations of the time. The Queen herself never saw it, as it was not completed until 1827 by Breguet's son. And that's not all, says Keller.
It was stolen with a whole collection of watches, but after 25 years, I think it was about 2006, it comes back. And now the original watch is in a museum in Jerusalem. We show the replica.
The replica was commissioned by the late Nicholas Hayek, the founder of the Swatch Group, who brought Montre Breguet back to Switzerland in 1999 as a luxury flagship for his company. Montre Breguet is now headed by his grandson, Mark A. Hayek, who sees some parallels between Breguet and his grandfather.
Breguet was not only excellent watchmaker, he was really a visionary, scientist, and probably one of the first great marketing guys as well, with the patents, with giving names to complications, and a lot of things that I find with my grandfather. He changed the watch industry, I think, what we've seen in the late 70s, early 80s with the watch crisis. He influenced not only brand or managed the brand, but influenced the whole industry, like Breguet did at his time. And I think definitely visionary.
Like Swatch today, Breguet succeeded in turning his brand international, no mean feat for the times, searching out markets as far afield as Russia and Turkey. But how Swiss was Breguet? The master watchmaker spent most of his career in France, apart from a 2-year stint in Switzerland during the French Revolution. However, his typically Swiss qualities of precision and perfectionism served him well. But it is for his universal language, the language of clocks, that he will be best remembered.
That was Isabel Leibel Johnson reporting from Zurich, and the Breguet exhibition runs until January 8th. So that's all we've got time for this week. If you'd like more information about any of these stories, to contribute to our reader forums or download this program as a podcast, visit swissinfo.ch. Thanks for listening. I'm Sophie Douay.